Whatever your spiritual path, chances are that the primary tenets of your faith include universal love, acceptance, and compassion. Yet 3,000 years after Moses, 2,500 years after Buddha, 2,000 years after Jesus, and 1,500 years after Muhammad, we are still divided by our differences. Religious intolerance, discrimination, even persecution and violence make up the not-so-golden rule. The book The Interfaith Alternative shows us how we can celebrate each other without fear of losing our own identity. It illuminates the path to creating a nurturing spiritual community that honors and includes all religious languages. In doing so, it demonstrates that through coming together in a mutually supportive environment, we can concentrate on our shared desire to remake the world into a compassionate, loving place. Stephen Greenbaum is an interfaith minister and is founder of the Living Interfaith Church in Lynnwood, Washington. Stephen, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Good to speak to you, Joe.
Thank you very much for being with us. How do you describe your religious background?
Well, my religious background is I was born and raised Jewish. The problem that I had from the get-go was that it seemed like a good path for me, but I could never grasp the idea that it was supposed to be everyone else's path as well. I look around me, and there are a lot of really good people trying to make the world better, and it has always seemed to me that what mattered is what you do with your path, not what path you're on. And so from the beginning, I've been searching for something like interfaith, where we could come together, celebrate each other, realize we're different, but still make the world we want to make.
With that said, do you still identify yourself as Jewish?
What I generally say is that my faith, the faith that I have is in interfaith. I believe that there are many different faiths that will get you to the right place. But I do define my own personal spiritual path as Jewish, yes.
And so when it comes to, because my understanding in the book, which I liked, was about embracing the spiritual diversity of realizing the strengths of so many other religions. So as you say, we can all come together and hopefully make the world a better place. But still be who we are. We don't homogenize it, right?
No. I am Jewish. When the pressure is on and I am really feeling like I need some, if you will, home cooking, my prayers are in Jewish prayers. When I will recite the Shema, that's who I am. But the reason I say my faith is in interfaith is because I strongly believe that all of us can be who we are and walk that path righteously and not give it up. So as a quick example, at the church where I'm the minister, we have Jews, we have Christians, we have Muslims, we have Baha'i, we have Buddhists, and we have some humanists. And we all come together, supporting each other, realizing we're different and learning about each other, as well as realizing that there's a lot to the world that we need to work on together.
So does that in itself, when you talk about interfaith, does that become a religion in and of itself?
I don't want to quibble. I would not call it a religion because I don't think interfaith is a faith. It is not a doctrine. There is no, you must believe this, not this, this, not this. Interfaith includes the rituals of Christians, Muslims, Jews, whomever. So I would say that interfaith is a faith in that it is a belief that there are all these different ways of approaching the sacred. It is not so much a religion because it doesn't create its own language. It's not trying to replace anything. It's not trying to say, no, Judaism, no, be interfaith. Christianity, no, be interfaith. So it's not a religion per se. It doesn't create religious language unique to itself. It is a faith. It's a faith that, as the Japanese put it in a folk saying, that there are many roads to the top of Mount Fuji.
Mm.
So there are many ways of getting there.
So how do you become a reverend?
Well, I became a reverend by going to seminary, studying scripture, studying primarily Christianity and Judaism in the seminary. It was a Jesuit seminary. But then I interned at an interfaith church, and I was there first as an intern, and then they decided they wanted me there, and I liked staying there, so I was there for, they ordained me as an interfaith minister. I stayed there for another 3 years, and then founded the Living Interfaith Church up in Linwood, where I am now.
So, as you say, that there is only us, and you're celebrating our common humanity. So when it comes to readings and the structure of a service, what do you draw from?
We draw from all over the place. It will depend on the specific service. We sort of divide our services, for lack of a better way, and there are two services are sometimes on topics which draw from varying spiritual paths, and sometimes we're celebrating a particular holiday like Christmas or Easter or Passover or Ramadan or the Buddha's birthday, which is just a couple of weeks ago. If we're celebrating a particular spiritual path, we draw on the text of that path. So when we celebrate a Christian holiday, and since I'm not Christian, I don't try to celebrate it. I ask friends who are ministers or chaplains to come and lead the service. Then we are using the language of that and the scripture of that particular path. For example, we have something in every service that we call an interfaith response, and that varies. Sometimes we sing the Shema, the Jewish prayer. Sometimes we sing the doxology, which is from the Christian tradition. Sometimes we sing Bismillah Rahman Yirrahim, which is from the Islamic tradition. But again, that's a little tricky. That's from the Sufi tradition because there isn't that much music in a typical Islamic service, and I don't want to tread there on someone's feet. So we try to be very careful to observe that particular tradition when we are involved with that tradition. And for those of us who aren't of that tradition, for example, being Jewish, when we celebrate Easter, I'm celebrating it because there are people in our congregation who are Christian. It is their holiday, and I love them, and I want to be a part of celebrating what is for them a great and important holiday. So we're not there to convert or convince each other. We're there to learn about each other, to share our deepest sacred selves, and then, which is what you mentioned earlier, the crucial thing is to then go out and make the world that Jesus asked for, that Hillel asked for, that Muhammad asked for, that Buddha has asked for, love each other, act with compassion, and act in community. Don't build walls between ourselves. And this is one way that we can do that, by worshiping together, by coming together. We can take those walls down and realize that we're all human beings. We're different, yes. We're not losing ourselves. It doesn't become some great stew where you lose who you are. We remain who we are, but we are also sharing. It's a beautiful thing. I've really gained a great deal from it.
It seems in your explanation and in reading the book that it's more of a learning experience than anything else, of learning about other faiths, learning about other traditions.
Well, it can be tricky. It is partly a learning experience, but it's going more deeply into different faiths. Yes, it's a learning experience, but it's also a very profound sacred experience. One of the great, and this goes back to my own history when I was a choral director back in the days when I was waving my arms and people did my bidding. It was a great thing, but I was a Jewish choir director at a Methodist church, and one of the things that I found was wonderful is it was a profound experience worshiping with these wonderful Methodists. I didn't stop being Jewish. Mm. They never tried to make me stop being Jewish, and I was always, this is who I am. But it was this idea that we can only meet the sacred through our own language, through our own spiritual selves. deprives us of some wonderful and very holy moments. So while, yes, it is a learning experience, it is also a very profound sacred experience as well.
Do you meet on Sunday?
We meet twice a month. We meet the second and fourth Sundays of the month, yes. We meet at 11 o'clock because the later in the morning it is, the more likely it is that I'm a coherent minister, which is always a good thing.
Do you find that people typically will do this in concert with their chosen religion, so that they would go to that, perhaps they would go to temple and then to this, or that they would go to mass and then make this part of their spiritual journey?
Well, that's why we meet twice a month, to make that possible, to make so that no one has to make a choice. To be quite frank, some of our members say, wow, we only have to meet twice a month, this is great, and so they only come twice a month. Others do exactly what you're saying. They come to our services twice a month, and they go to their home service or their home spiritual tradition twice or even three or four times a month, depending.
Because it would seem to me, no matter what your religion is, that if you are, and I certainly understand your path, but if you were diluting it in some way, that you would be taking away from your primary religion.
Well, yes, and if which is why, I mean, we don't ask anyone to leave who their spiritual community to join ours.
Right.
If you are on a particular path, and this is your path, and you really want to hew to it, to leave that and come only to interfaith would, I think, probably not be the greatest experience. Some people enjoy it, but for others, this is why we only meet twice a month, so that you can stay rooted in whatever spiritual tradition you come from, and you are adding to that, not diluting it. You are coming, you are practicing your own spiritual path, and you are practicing interfaith, where you are sharing your path and having other paths shared with you. So yes, that is why we very intentionally only meet twice a month. We don't want to say to anyone, you have to make a choice. I think it would be an unfortunate choice.
And non-believers?
If they are non-believers in the same accepting way as believers, of course. One of the things that I occasionally have a conversation with someone who is a non-believer, and I say, well, you're that's your belief, and you seem to be a fundamentalist. A fundamentalist atheist is as much a fundamentalist as a fundamentalist anybody else. It's my way or the highway. This is the answer. There is no argument. So if someone is a non-believer who is out to convince everyone else there is nothing there, that person doesn't work out well in an interfaith setting. However, someone, and we do have, that's why I said we have people who are humanists who do not believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
But they believe in community. They believe that we have to act together if we're finally going to make the world a world of love and compassion, which is taught in humanism as well as in our various religious paths. They find a welcome home, and they enjoy the services very much.
And then there is sort of, I would assume there is the group of people, which seems to be a very large group of people who just don't know.
Yes, and they, for them, it's almost a wonderful gift. There's no one of the things you don't have to know, and if you're seeking, we have a couple of people who talk to me, and they say, "Well, I don't know if I'm this or that." I said, "Well, you're a seeker." They said, "Yes, I'm a seeker." I said, "Welcome." People who are trying to find out, people who don't know. The most trouble will come from someone who is absolutely sure that they know and everyone else is wrong, and whether that person is Christian, Muslim, Jewish, or an atheist, they're the ones who will have the most problem with interfaith because they think they have the lock on the answer. But for everyone else, it's a chance to really come together, embrace our spiritual selves, and do in the world. I mean, again, believing without doing, it doesn't get us very far. It's what are we going to do in the world? How are we going to make the world a more loving, more peaceful place where there is less homelessness, less hunger? We can do this working together. It's much harder to do if we always retreat behind walls of right belief, walls that say, well, I'm right, you're going to hell. Or at best, I'm right, you're wrong, but if you want to be wrong, that's okay, it's your privilege. But to get past that, to be able to say there are these varying spiritual paths, all of which can lead us to the place that we want to go, can lead us to love and compassion and a world where we are working together. And then to celebrate these different paths, not by losing who we are, but by, if you will, we're not asking anyone to cut their roots. We're asking them to grow a couple of new ones as well, if that makes sense.
Indeed it does. The name of the book is The Interfaith Alternative, Embracing Spiritual Diversity. The book is published by New Society. Stephen Greenbaum, I thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Do you have 1 second for a quick plug on the website?
Go ahead. We're out of time, but go ahead.
Okay, the website is interfaithalternative.com, and there's more information there.
Interfaithalternative.com, that is the name of the book, Interfaith Alternative. Stephen Greenbaum, again, thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.